Okay, well, first of all, we want to let you guys know how excited we are to be here tonight, how nervous we are to stand up and share with you guys, but we consider this a real privilege, and again, just so encouraged by each of you guys coming to reengage and just being open to God working in your lives and in your marriage and just the great stories we continue to hear. So again, just to be able to share with you guys is a privilege. And just want to let you know before we go into this how excited I am to be married to Tana. And we're going to talk about just, you know, how marriage is hard work, but it's really a joy. And just living life with Tana as a friend and companion each day has really been fun for, I guess it'll be 16 years this summer that we've been married. So, yeah. So as we share, I think hopefully you'll get to know Tana a little bit and see why I feel I'm so lucky. But the first thing we want to just share with you guys about us is we are complete opposites. And it won't take you but a few seconds as we talk to realize this. But a couple things that are different about us is I was born in Chicago, Illinois.
And I was born in a tiny little town called Opelika, Alabama. And if you don't say it like Opelika, you're not saying it right.
I did not step foot into a church until I got to college.
And I was born a pastor's daughter and led the worship at my dad's tiny church throughout all high school.
I grew up in a house with a brother and a male dog, and we played sports all the time.
I grew up with two older sisters that are very close in age. My older sister is 3 years older than me, and my middle sister's 11 months older than me. And we talked all the time. And my personality has been described by some as a party waiting to happen.
And I like to go to a good party.
So that worked out well.
The story of us getting together started in 1993, and basically the situation had been I had been not dating for a while, trying to focus. I had been a young Christian at the time, became a Christian in college, and basically one day was driving down the road with one of my friends, and he was from Denton, and I said, hey, you know a lot of girls in Denton. I think I'm ready to meet some girls now, and would love your help. And he said, okay, well, I tell you what, I lead a Bible study, and there's this girl that has a sister that I can introduce you to. He thought I didn't want to meet any girls from Denton, because if you went on one date, it would get around, everybody would think you're serious. So he said, I'll introduce her to you, but if I do, you're going to marry her, because she's just one of those types of girls. So it's not great. I look forward to meeting her. So we were going to meet on Sunday night after the evening service at Denton Bible Church, and we were going to go get some ice cream afterwards. And so before the Sunday night, I got cold feet for that and decided, you know, why don't we just meet up on the stage for a minute afterwards and see how it goes from there. So we met afterwards, and I was obviously blown away by talking to Tana for just a couple minutes there. And being the control person I am, which you'll see as we share the story, I figured she lived in Louisville, so I waited about 20 minutes for her to drive home and then call and said, hey, you want to have lunch tomorrow? So we had lunch the next day, and it was like a three-hour lunch there.
I don't think we ate.
Yeah, we didn't eat. But anyway, so I knew the next day that she was probably going to be the one, like my friend had said.
And even though I had gone to church that same night that I met him with another guy, I snuck away to meet him, which is just so wrong, but it was actually so right. Mm-hmm. But after that date that we had, it was really clear to me, and I think I even remember going home that night and writing in my diary, I think I've met the man I'm going to marry. So I knew pretty soon, too. So we dated for 6 months. Had a lot of fun with that, and I remember taking a walk around my parents' neighborhood, because I was still living with my parents at the time, and he was like, okay, so how long do we have to give this dating thing before I can ask you to marry me? We can just get this thing done. And I was like, we're going to freak my parents out if we do this, if we've been dating like 6 weeks. So we decided I needed to give her 6 months. So we dated 6 months, and we were engaged for 6 months, and we were married one day shy from a year from the day we met. And the first few years of marriage were really good. They were pretty much stress-free. Rick had a great job at a great church in Carrollton that we loved. And he enjoyed his job. It was kind of his on that first date, actually, I had asked him, what is your kind of dream job as far as ministry goes? And that job was basically what he got right as we were getting married. So he kind of started off with his dream job, which is such a blessing. And I was finishing up college and was working as a receptionist. So I got paid to talk on the phone. It's like the perfect job for me. But after we started trying to have kids, it started to get a little bit more difficult because we started struggling with some infertility issues. So for about 3.5 years, we tried to get pregnant. And finally that day came, and we did, and we were so excited. And then we lost that child toward the end of that first trimester. And it was so devastating. It was very, very difficult for both of us. But personality-wise, we are so different. It was really hard on a lot of levels because we grieved very differently. And so I think my expectations for what I thought he needed to do to grieve well was very unlike what he needed. So that was kind of the first realization in our early marriage that that we just had to realign our expectations. And we had some good discussions about that. But the more we relied on the Lord to kind of get us through that, he did. And thankfully, a year later, we were able to get pregnant again. And I think we have a picture for you guys. But in 2000, we had our first little boy, and he just turned 10. His name is Tyler. And then about 3.5 years later, we had April, and she is 6 years old, going on 16. And almost 3 years ago, we had sweet little, we call him Mr. B. His name is Brandon, but we call him Mr. B. So that's our precious family that the Lord completely blessed us with after all that we had gone through. So that was really fun. And it was a long road, and it took its toll on our marriage in a lot of ways. The stress between Rick and I with the infertility issues that we had between each pregnancy, as well as going from 1 to 2 children, was much more difficult than I had anticipated. So I think after April's birth was when our marriage began to change.
Yeah, and then really as far as it changing for the worse, there's a lot of things I'm going to share here that I contributed to our marriage. And the first was how I dealt with stress. And being someone that has issues with wanting to perform and control and try to fix things, there was just stresses that came from work, being in a job that, you know, I'm on staff over the community groups and all the new members connecting, and there's just a lot of relational issues that I didn't deal with very well, and I would bring those issues home. I didn't have good boundaries to when I left work to kind of leave work there, and so I would come home and didn't deal with those well. I would, tend to be thinking about work at home when we'd be at the dinner table or doing other things as a family. I'd be drifting off, and Tana or even my kids sometimes would say, "Hey, Dad, what are you thinking about?" And I feel like, okay, I'm caught because I'm thinking through something at work that I want to do. And so, I tried to get rid of the stress at work by just working harder and trying to get more of my boxes checked. So I thought the stress would go away. And so work was getting my best energy, not Tana or my family. And I didn't realize it till later, but to be completely honest, I think a lot of guys are wired this way, and it's so wrong, but we tend to be conquerors. And the whole idea of, you know, when I got married, I took Tana for granted and just assumed that, okay, well, I'm married and, you know, have that area of my life in order, and then there's work things that I want to do. And so I was putting my energy into thinking through that instead of, you know, how can I pursue Tana and really get to know her and love and serve her? So so that was the first, you know, big problem of how I coped with this work stress and then little kids, you know, stress. And, the second was just trying to look at sex with Tana as an outlet for my stress. And so I began to, you know, put way too much energy into just looking forward to that area of our marriage as a way to cope and deal with the stress that kept building up with me. And so neither of those areas took the stress away. In fact, it just made it worse. And some of the results of me trying to continue to, on my own, fix this problem were I became more and more selfish, more and more it was about me and what I wanted and what I needed. I became more manipulative in terms to try to get the things that I wanted that I thought would deal with my stress. Became more and more insensitive to, again, Tana and her emotions and her feeling and her life and what was going on, because it was all about me. And then I began to get frustrated when these things didn't take that stress away and do that. So I didn't communicate very well during this time. I was not sharing these feelings. I was stuffing them more, and that just made the issues worse. But what I should have done is apply a verse that I'd memorized a long time ago, which was 1 Peter 5:7, which says, casting your anxiety on him because he cares for you. So the right solution would have been, obviously, to go to Jesus and to say, hey, these are the stresses you know that I'm dealing with, and I need you to take them from me, because all these other things are not going to provide life, but only you do. But I didn't do that. I continued to try to solve it my own way. And so after that, one of the things that we tried to come together on is in terms of just the frequency of sex for both of us, so we would be on the same page. We tried to set up some nights that we could both kind of plan for and in different ways, which didn't work out. In large part, goes back to my insensitivity, because I was so selfish and concerned with my own things. Even if we had these nights set up, I was completely out of tune with her emotions, her being tired, what was going on. I was just oblivious to that. It was just like, okay, we'd planned and waited, and this was the night. And so what potentially we talked through about helping us in the busyness of kids and being tired to kind of say, okay, let's work towards this, became on my part something that was very divisive and became a burden and produced pressure. And again, I didn't communicate well or handle it through that, because I didn't communicate. And sometimes nights would come and go and we wouldn't necessarily say anything, and I would get more frustrated, whereas, you know, I should have obviously been sensitive and been able to talk through where I could have maybe admitted and asked forgiveness for that, but just to share feelings. But instead I stuffed, and it began to really hurt us more.
And at that point, I had two little ones at home, a newborn, and I was just maxed out physically and emotionally. I was just tired all the time and became very focused on what I needed, which was mostly sleep, and then just the needs of the two kids that I had. And I think at some point in that, I actually convinced myself that Rick didn't have any needs and that his only need was to meet my needs. Which compounded the fact that I just began over and over to stuff and not really explain to him why things weren't happening the way that they were scheduled or supposed to happen. I didn't explain why I was frustrated or how I was feeling in that area of sex specifically. I just became more and more embittered in my heart and resentful, especially when he would try to pursue me sexually. So I became actually at one point so hardened in my heart towards him that I was actually emotionally and sometimes even physically angry before and during and after we had sex. And I would usually cringe when he would touch me.
And I just need to be honest with you guys. You know, Tana has obviously forgiven me and God has forgiven me, but it's really hard to sit up here and, you know, as we were preparing for this and to read and work together and just feel that, just as a husband, and for her to have gone through that time, for me to be so into me and know that, you know, things had gotten that bad. It just, I still have to just pray and, you know, say, okay, Lord, this, that was a season that you taught me, but that it's hard to hear. But after that, our conflicts continued to get worse. And again, the cycles that we were in of you know, focusing on each other, just we began to, you know, butt heads more and more. And so finally, one day after, you know, what seemed to be a really bad conflict, we called our community group. And we have really been blessed with five other couples that that we live life with. And they really jumped in to help us. And we called and just said, hey, you know, is there any way that we could meet tonight? Because we really feel like we're kind of at the end of this and could really value you guys helping us to work through it. So as they had done other times for us and other couples, everybody dropped everything and got babysitters that night, and we all went over to one of the couple's house and just met and worked through this. And a couple verses that are really important are Proverbs 11:14 says, "Where there is no guidance, the people will fall, but in the abundance of counselors there is victory." And when we were in this time, we really needed some victory, and we needed some other counselors in our life to really help point us to Christ and also God's Word and help us see our blind spots, which is what community is meant to do. The other verse that I thought was very appropriate during that time is Proverbs 27:6, which says, "Faithful are the words of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy." And I personally really needed to be wounded that night if I really wanted to grow. And again, community is there to help me and to help us be who God wants us to be. And so if I'm honest with you, that night I felt like we had a very controlled but heated conflict in front of all these other couples. And it was really hard to sit through that and to feel like I was on the hot seat that night and everybody was looking into our marriage and, you know, evaluating things, which, you know, a lot of it, obviously, I had a lot of growth. And so we were able to look at and talk through those things. And so as I sat through, there was a part of me that really wanted to understand my role because, you know, I want to grow and be more like Christ. But there also was a huge part of me that wanted to be understood and wanted everybody in the group to see, you know, my side of it and be able to go, you know, okay, well, I feel so bad. And so just to confess that. But basically, one of the things that really helped the most that night, one of the wounds that someone shared that I really needed was they asked me if I've ever considered sex being an idol in my life. And I remember when I heard it, I was like, okay, all guys are, you know, they think about sex a lot, and I think we're wired that way. And, you know, kind of, I was angry about the whole night, but I said, okay, well, God, if, you know, I really want to go away, and if that's something I need to understand better, help me. And so, as happens a lot, God was very faithful to meet me the next morning. I just happened to have my quiet time in Colossians, and was in Colossians 3:5, and the verse I read said, "Therefore consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed, which amounts to idolatry." And amazing, the next day I read that and I was like, oh my goodness. And so as I prayed about it, God began to show me that that sex had become an idol to me, specifically in the area of greed and the lack of contentment, that whether we had sex or not, it seemed to never be enough because I was trying to cope and I thought more of that would provide for those needs. And he really showed me that was an idol in my life, and specifically this greed and lack of contentment. What he had meant to be a gift and a good thing in our marriage, I had taken to an extreme and had turned into something that, you know, the enemy was using not to, we should have been pursuing oneness, but it was pulling us apart. Philippians 4:12 says, "Not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am in." And again, I realized that I lacked contentment in my life, and God did not want me to go through that. He wanted me to be content in him alone. Another verse he led me to shortly thereafter is 1 Peter 3:7. "You husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way." And so he began to just show me that I was not living with Tina in an understanding way. I was not being sensitive to all the things she was going through. My first concern was not, again, how can I love her? How can I serve her? I wonder what she's feeling like today. I wonder what her day was like. And I just hadn't been like that. And so God was really saying, hey, some major things need to change in this, and your focus needs to be only about loving and serving her. And so that was really a big deal. 1 Corinthians 7:5 says, "Stop depriving one another except by agreement for a time that you devote yourself to prayer." And I realized that that's what we needed during this time. One, because I needed some time to crush that idol in my life and help to work through and let Jesus be my source of life and strength and not sex. The other thing was Tana needed some time to heal from the pressure she'd felt from me for so long of, you know, this desire for sex. But also we needed to rebuild some trust. I needed her to trust my motives, and that every time I did something, it wasn't for a motive to try to have sex with her. And so we thought, if we have a period where sex isn't even on the table, then we can have some time to rebuild, as I can try to love her and not have her immediately think it's going towards sex. So if we knew that that wasn't even there, then maybe we could slowly build some of that back. And you know, last verse is John 10:10. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. But I have come that you may have life and have it abundantly. And again, that's the key to this whole thing, is Jesus wants and needs to be my complete source of life, not anything else.
So after everything had come to a head with our community group, and it was just the good, bad, and the ugly, it was just kind of all out on the table, I was so thankful, and I was very relieved, because I felt like that was something that, you know, you want, when you carry it around for so long and then you share it with others, it's that whole shared burden is so much lighter. And so I was just very thankful for them in a lot of ways, but specifically just to be sharing that burden with other people. But I didn't really think it had anything to do with me, really. I was more just anxious for him to see the error of his ways and change and all would be right. And it was really amazing to see how quickly the Lord really showed me where my heart was. And it took the girls in the community group continuing to ask me questions about how I felt toward him, and the thoughts that I would have just even while he was at work, the way that I would view him in my mind. And I really became just amazed at how hardened my heart was toward him and how embittered I was, how resentful I was. And we would be arguing over the stupidest things time and time and time again, and not communicating well, and that was really the source of it, is that my heart was very hard towards him. And I knew that I wanted to change that. I wasn't concerned that he had needs, and I actually resented the fact that he even needed sex from me or wanted sex. So I wasn't asking the Lord to change my heart. I was really more focused on asking the Lord to change him. So once that flipped, I picked up a book and I started reading. It was The Power of a Praying Wife. And that really was the catalyst, I think, for me to kind of just turn my eyes away from where he needed to grow and change to where I was at fault and where I was contributing hugely to the issues that we had as a couple and as a family. And so once I started down that road, a great deal of peace came, but it was a long road. I did the Love Dare, which was also another really instrumental thing for me to do, because again, it was another way for the Lord to show me, this isn't about you praying for him to change. This is about you and your heart, because there's a lot of junk in there. And so I did that, did a lot of scripture reading, and one of the things that I was studying was the condition of my heart. Proverbs 18:2, it says, "A fool finds no pleasure in understanding, but delights in airing his own opinions." And I realized that was me. I really wasn't interested in understanding why Rick was the way he was and why he was doing the things he was doing. I just wanted him to understand how I felt and how it was making me feel. And I also became convicted that I should want to love my husband and meet his needs, because that's what the Lord's called me to be and to do as his wife, not because he deserves it or has earned it in some way. And then I began to see that I didn't trust his heart and that I would negatively interpret his actions most of the time. So I asked the Lord to help me to let go of the anger and the resentment I had towards him. And he led me to 2 Corinthians 10:4-5, which says, "The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ." So I began to ask the Lord to help me take my thoughts captive. And I was really sad to see how often I needed to do that in a 24-hour time frame. There were so many negative thoughts that would just pop into my mind regarding him. And I would become so angry with him, and he was at work. He wasn't even home. And I just was amazed at that as I started to really have my eyes be open to that. The Lord began to change that, and it wasn't overnight. It took a while, a lot of time and a lot of prayer and a lot of accountability. But he did begin to soften my heart and heal the hurt, and a lot better communication between the two of us, me not stuffing and just being angry at the little things, but really getting to the root of why I was upset. And that made a huge difference in our relationship as well. And I still struggle with those negative thoughts. They still come up and they still creep in, and I catch myself questioning his motives at times. But I celebrate the fact that the love and the thankfulness that I have towards him in my heart far outweighs the negative things that do pop up into my mind. And I'm a sinner, and I'm always going to struggle with my selfish nature. And that's just something that I know that he brought me through this whole process to just continue to put before me and just say, Tana, you can't do this on your own. Marriage is too hard. Life is too hard. But he is the one that turned that around. I've seen his hand, and I've seen him turn our marriage around, and it brings me so much joy and so much peace that he is an active and a very powerful God, and he can radically change your heart, but I just had to let him.
Last thing we want to share is just we both still have a lot of work to do in our marriage. We feel like, you know, we're still struggling with a lot of the same issues, but finding victory as we turn to Christ and his word and just dealing with our own sin is a real simple, you know, way, place to start. Community has been and continues to be a real gift of God to us, because there's other people that continue to see and ask how we're loving and treating each other. And Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is living and active and sharper than any two-edged sword, and piercing as far as the division of the soul and spirit, of both joint and marrow, and able to judge the thoughts and intentions of the heart." And that's really what we both need. And the more we go to God's word for that, it convicts us. And finally, it's only by walking with Jesus as our source for life that we have any chance for success.